keeps my clock, and I was having an urge. To tell you, it's time to go up there. Thank you. Thank you, members, and my apologies for being late. Okay, Senator Dahl, please, let's continue. I think you had a couple of other testifiers that were in the list for testimony. If you could please call the other testifiers, and then we have other testifiers who are also in the list. So if you could proceed with your testifiers, we'll appreciate it.
Sure. And Madam Chair, I don't know if this works, but could I introduce an amendment that just fine-tunes a little bit as well? I believe it just puts it in just a little technical change with a few sentences.
Yeah, Senator, why don't we, if you could call a couple of your testifiers. I think you have Mr. Heistad. I don't know, is he here?
Madam Chair, and I don't know if...
will he be here?
I don't believe he's coming. I think the testifiers here have spoken.
So you don't have any more testifiers at this point?
I do not believe.
Okay.
I do.
Okay. So why don't we hear from the testifiers that were...
I'm sorry. Madam Chair, I think Matt Mose here did want to he went over the bill this morning, but I think he would like to just make a few comments.
Mr. Mose, do you have additional testimony that you didn't cover during your testimony?
Yes, Madam Chair. I actually was asked to get through the walkthrough of the bill, so I delayed any comments on the merits of the bill.
Okay. Mr. Moss, let me find out who else is in here so that we can proceed with Senator Dahl's amendment. Is Mr. Bartholomew here? If you could also be ready for testimony. And then Ms. Wallstein, are you here? You're here. Thank you. And Mr. Maves. Do we have Mr. Maves in here? So we have three individuals that would like to provide testimony. So, Mr. Moss, if you could be brief, I'd appreciate it.
Good evening, Madam Chair. I'm Matthew Mose, the Chief Academic Officer for the St. Paul Public Schools. I appreciate the opportunity to testify before you today in support of Senate File 1103. This bill does reflect many of the key recommendations offered by the Commissioner's Working Group on Assessment and Accountability, and it provides our state an opportunity to set a new course for statewide assessment. As one of the co-chairs of the group, I can say with certainty that the members of the committee wanted to offer a different vision of how statewide assessment should support learning first and foremost while advancing the key educational priorities of the state. The bill before you accomplishes these tasks. As a senior administrator in the state's largest district and an educator committed to equity and excellence, I can also offer a perspective of how our existing assessment system is out of balance and often counterproductive to our shared commitment to improve achievement for every child. In the last decade, assessments, whether state-required or district or school-selected, have become omnipresent in our schools. When I last testified before you, I shared with you our reality in St. Paul that the end of winter break ushers in a perpetual assessment window until the end of the school year. Please understand, I am a firm believer in formal assessment and the role it plays in teaching and learning. In fact, I believe it is essential, but it is only a tool in service to teaching and learning. We are not going to test our way to equity and excellence. The proposed legislation before you is rather ambitious in its scope. It offers a new approach to assessment, one intended to support our future rather than respond to federal mandates. Senate File 1103 attempts to emphasize the role of assessment as a tool to support instruction and to provide feedback to students, families, and teachers about the progress and trajectory of students. The proposed legislation also addresses an increasingly pressing situation regarding our state's high-stakes graduation requirement. Since we backed our way into the grad, we have known the day was coming directly that we need to address high-stakes graduation exams. That day is here as we can no longer delay calling the question, since we have students and families waiting for the state to clarify what exactly will be required for students to graduate. The concept of minimum requirements or state-mandated cut scores appeals to common sense, but that does not make it good policy. I still cannot fully understand the theory of action underlying the policy, that adding some set target for individual students somehow motivates them to improve. My experience in St. Paul suggests just the opposite. It is an obstacle that discourages, demotivates, and alters the lives of some students for the worse. And what does the state get for imposing these costs on particular students? Some theoretical signaling of the value of a high school diploma that seems to have little practical impact in the labor market, some commitment to a principle of high standards, a parting lesson about the realities of adulthood. In the end, this proposal offers a way forward without definitively answering the question about the effectiveness of high-stakes graduation exams. It reorients our system to the goal of having every student prepared for college or career upon graduation. This is a significant shift. To ensure this shift happens, the concept of cut scores was purposefully rejected by the working group. The assessments recommended by the working group and proposed in Senate File 1103 are a tool to assist us in that shift, but much work remains to reorient our system. While there may be some tweaking needed to the proposed language, I ask you to reject any attempt to add minimum required scores to the proposal. Such an addition would unravel the coherence of the proposal and worsen the situation that we already face. I encourage you to pass this proposal and to move our state forward on its own path regarding assessment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Most. If you were to put a number into the hours that have gone into putting these proposals together, including the task force recommendations, how many hours have you spent or you think have been spent into putting this proposal, this recommendation for us?
Madam Chair, the working group met for 6 months, and each of those meetings was 3 hours together and then many hours outside of that group. And so I would say that the people on the task force easily committed at least 30 to 40 hours of time to the various components of the working group. And then there was the editing of the working group report, which took a fair amount of time. And now the ongoing work for the drafting this legislation, I would say easily 30 or 40 hours.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And thank you again, Senator Dahl, for your work. Mr. Bartolomeo and Ms. Wilson, if we could ask you to please approach the table with your testimony.
Hi, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership, and we also served on the assessment task force and appreciate the leadership that Mr. Mose and others shared for that process. It was also reminiscent of a task force that took place in 2009, 2010, I believe, as well. So this has been a big issue before the state for a number of years. And we appreciate the opportunity to talk about Senate File 1103 because it gives the legislature and the public a chance to not only ask what we want a high school diploma to signify, but also if we expect all students to meet at least a certain minimum set of expectations. And before I'll summarize some of our concerns with Senate File 1103, I'd like to highlight what we do support. For example, we do support the shift to a series of exams that are directly aligned to post-secondary admissions. This will improve transparency for students, families, and teachers in regard to a student's current academic preparation and where they need to be. We support the added attention to providing students with developmental instruction, the goal of expanding student access to post-secondary courses, and the increased focus on helping students and families better understand career opportunities. Each of these changes in this bill will help students better prepare for their future. Unfortunately, Senate File 1103 has one fatal flaw, which assures we'll grant high school diplomas to students, even though we know they aren't adequately prepared. And for a state with some of the worst student achievement gaps in the country, repealing minimum expectations for all students sends the message that the state tacitly accepts these achievement gaps. This is especially troubling given the fact that the performance of students of color on the grad exams has steadily improved at rates greater than their white peers. In other words, we're seeing success in closing the achievement gaps between white students and students of color. As you can see from the handout that was just passed around, in the top right, the percent of African-American students passing the reading grad between 2008 and 2012 has increased by 15%. For Hispanic students, the gain was 9.5%, and white students improved by 4%. In the writing category, or column, you can see that African-American students passing the grad improved by 11%. Hispanic students was 10%. White students was 1%. Unfortunately, on the math column, you can see we haven't made similar progress in helping students meet expectations in math, partly because the state suspended the math requirement. And because of this, we're set to repeal a policy that is otherwise working. Rather than giving up on the use of high school exams to create minimum expectations for all students, we need to make better use of the data that these exams provide. As an example, a recent independent evaluation of the impact of California's high school exams found that the percent of students passing has steadily increased, especially among Hispanic, African American, and low-income students, and their dropout rates have steadily declined. In addition, by interviewing students, they found improvements in student performance resulted from a combination of increased help in the classroom and increased effort by students. The California exams created clear expectations for students that they and their teachers could work towards. This is consistent with what happened in Minnesota with the creation of the basic skills tests, which were first effective for the class of 2000. The following is a quote from a metro area school district assessment coordinator in 1999. The most positive thing the basic skills tests, has done is that they've focused our efforts as a district, and it has focused many of the students on making sure they have those skills. In 5 short years, 70% of all jobs in Minnesota will require completion of at least some post-secondary education, and this will accelerate with our increasingly global, knowledge-based economy. We have the opportunity now to create a set of policies that will coordinate efforts to ensure all students can graduate from high school prepared for entry into post-secondary education. Senate File 1103 begins to create a potential framework. Unfortunately, the bill also repeals the expectation that all students will graduate with at least a minimum set of skills in reading, writing, and math. Closing student achievement gaps and preparing all students for post-secondary education won't be easy, but we can't accomplish these goals without first making the commitment to doing so. Thank you, and we'd hope that you'd consider the alternative approach in Senate File 1126. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Amy Wallstein. I'm the Director of Education and Workforce Development Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I had the committee pass out a letter that we wrote to the commissioner after the working group report was released. Our concerns remain primarily the same because the bill mirrors the recommendations of the working group report. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce champions alignment of the P-12 and higher ed systems, particularly relative to college and career ready academic standards and assessments. And we support the majority of the recommendations of the working group and in the bill. However, we do have several concerns and questions for the committee to consider. As Jim testified earlier, this bill eliminates the grad assessments as a requirement for graduation without putting in place a statewide minimum expectation for earning a diploma. It raises the question, how do we ensure meaningful diplomas if there isn't a statewide minimum? There's a potential then for 330-some different diplomas and no individual stakes, no individual accountability for the student. Our position is that Minnesota students must be able to empirically demonstrate that they have first mastered high school academic requirements, and second are ready to succeed in college. If the new system will be utilizing national assessments, such assessments have benchmarks based on scores that indicate if a student is likely to succeed in college-level classes. We ask you to consider the benefits of using college readiness benchmarks as one measure for diploma attainment. And setting the benchmarks at levels that won't require significant remediation at 2 or 4 year institutions would be of much benefit. We do reject that adding a minimum expectation would unravel the proposal. Senator Stumpf has introduced a bill, Senate File 1126, that accomplishes the goals of the four-point plan and also has tools for setting minimum expectations for a diploma. Again, we support the concept and most of the bill, but we cannot support elimination of the grad exit exams without a comparable replacement. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Senator, now we can move to introduce your amendment, and then, Senators, I don't know if your amendments have been shared with the staff, so how many do we have? Just Senator Dahls. Any other amendments that are coming our way? Okay, Senator, so you have one amendment that we need to entertain, and then Senator Clausen, you have a question, and you have an amendment. So we have two amendments. Okay, Senator Dahl, if you could
I'd like just to move the A4 amendment and
could you explain the A4 amendment?
Is that in your hands? And again, Madam Chair, it just quite simply a little technical change that conforms it to a House bill is all.
Okay. Any questions, members? If not, all of those in favor of the A4 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Clausen.
Yes. Can we pass out the amendment? I think we
what
have
number is that, Senator?
It is A15.
A15. The A15 amendment.
While it's being passed out, just by way of introduction, proposal that you see, 1103, requires that there's going to be quite a bit of targeted instruction, intervention, remediation for students who are not meeting those benchmarks or the college readiness assessments. And it's been my experience that in looking at the ACT and the other assessments that are related to it, that you don't get a very good individual picture of the student's deficiencies. And what this bill proposal or amendment is proposing, that the vendor be required to provide an individual student item analysis of the exam results and a summary of specific diagnostic strands, which will then make it easier for educators to target instruction, intervention, or remediation. Again, if you look at the Explorer, the plan, the ACT, you get aggregated data of a class or a group of students, but you do not get individual results. And I think it's going to be extremely important, given the content of this bill proposal, that we have that information available to educators.
Thank you, Senator Clausen. Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, I'm going to have our testing experts just make a comment on the amendment.
Please.
Madam Chair and
yes.
Senator Clausen, I'm so glad that you brought up this point. That's part of the reason why the program includes a college placement diagnostic. In a college placement diagnostic, whether you'd use current day nationally normed exams like an Accuplacer or a Compass, actually do have the strand and subdomain analysis on an individual basis. So students who weren't on track would actually receive those individual results that then Minsky and the Department of Ed and local school districts could work together to create what those targeted interventions should be, customized specifically to what that individual student needs for remediation.
So, Ms. Mass, there will not be a conflict with this?
No.
Okay.
No comment.
Madam Chair, again, just one comment. I know that to get that information many times, there's an extra charge as well.
In a college placement, I'm sorry, Madam Chair and Senator Claussen, in a college placement diagnostic, that's part of the cost initially. So that's the evolution that's happened with college placement diagnostic exams. And today, the cost of an ACT's product or an SAT's product for a college placement diagnostic on average is somewhere around $1.50 a unit.
Very good.
Thank you. On the A13 amendment, any more questions?
So, Madam Chair and Senator Claussen, do you still feel a need for including this language?
I do.
And okay. And again, Madam Chair, and of course, it may be more costly ultimately, but I think the intent of the amendment is on the right track. So I think we'll go ahead with it.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate that as well. I think this is a good amendment. Hopefully, we will be able to work it out. I think we do need to figure out what to do with the students that are not able to move forward. Any more questions on the amendment? If not, all of those in favor of the A13 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Senator, any other concludes?
Well, Madam Chair, and I know the business partnership and the chamber did bring up some concern. We did visit with them for a few hours one afternoon, and Representative Briner did as well. And I think, you know, the cut score, and maybe I'll just have a final comment from my testing experts, but, you know, remember, this is a suite of assessments, and it's just not that one score. I think that the beauty of this particular legislation is that we are kind of looking at these tests in the long term, and not just that one, that high stakes test as an 11th grader. We are going to get at the problem much sooner with the Explore, the Plan test, to get that diagnostic and remediation much further. We also, in terms of the data that was presented, we believe actually that while the it's impressive that there's been some improvement, what's to say that won't improve even more with an ACT in place than the GRAD? We also have some real concerns about what happens if we don't, in terms of the number of people that are dropping out. Matt Mose can testify that in St. Paul, at least, we are going to see a high dropout rate if we do not make this fix. So if I might just defer to a final comment on that particular to address their
Madam Chair, Senators. So Mr. Bartholomew mentioned a California study that suggested that the California high school exit exams was shown to be effective. There are other studies of California that show that the test is not effective, that there is no evidence that it's leading to the improvements. And on top of that, there are other recent studies that cover data from New Jersey, from Massachusetts. There are studies that have been conducted using national data sets over a period of 20 plus years from out of the University of Minnesota, from Dr. Warren there, all that show that the presence of high stakes exit exams either is a non-impact or actually has negative impacts on students of color, low-income students, and English learners. And so while the research base out there may be unsettled, it is certainly trending in a particular direction. And then when you start looking at the human cost, when you start looking at the students that staff in St. Paul work with every day, and they start talking about the students that haunt them who have tried to pass a particular grad test and have faded away, have lost scholarships, and have deferred their futures because they face this obstacle on top of other obstacles. And you start to ask yourself the question as to whether or not this is truly an effective policy. And I don't want to, obviously you can't dispute the numbers that Mr. Bartholomew mentioned. And certainly we've seen some similar improvements in St. Paul, but that's not to say it's because of the grad test. And so there have been a lot of other things that we've undertaken in St. Paul to address the achievement gap across all grades, and particularly in high schools. The grad test is only one factor in that.
Thank you. Senator questions in the chat?
Oh, I have some comments, but they could come later.
I think we're ready to, close comments. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you know, this is one of these bills that's got a lot of good things in it, but there is also a problem. So let me just say that I do support, the college-aligned test. I think that is a huge step in the right direction, and so I thank the committee and the senator for doing that. And also I noticed the resources to remediate. I think that's important. Identify early on and provide and direct towards resources to remediate. Again, a key thing. And I also noticed language to encourage high school students who are able to maximize our PSEO or college in the schools and get college credit while they're in high school. So those are all good things. And I'm very pleased to support those parts of the bill. However, I am very concerned about stripping out any level of minimum expectations. And I hope we get a chance to hear Senate File 1126, which takes all of these good things that you have done here, but also we need something to bridge the gap. We can't just say suddenly there's no graduation minimum expectations until we get things aligned better. So I think that is problematic. You know, 75% of our kids that graduate from high school are not prepared for college. 75%. And as I think your testifiers have mentioned, in just a few years, 70% of our kids are going to need something beyond high school just to get a job. And so we must make sure that we have those minimum expectations. And then I have two specific questions. One, Senator Dahl, I really I like the first part of your bill for sure. This is language that that I wrote 2 years ago, part of the Governor's Workforce Development Council recommendations, that career post-secondary plan. So this is, I have to say, of course, I agree with that, but I want to ask you about one thing. Why did you choose to strike out the language that required school districts, encourage school districts, to seek and use revenue and in-kind contributions from non-state sources and to seek administrative cost savings through innovative local funding arrangements? It seems to me like we want our schools to do that. And so I want to know why you struck that language.
Senator, could you give us a sense of where that is? Or so?
Oh, I'm sorry. Page. It's 2.23 to 2.28.
Okay. Excuse me. Thank you. I just wanted to locate.
Yes.
Senator Dahl, if you could.
Madam Chair, I'll let Matt Mose answer
Mr.
that.
Mr. Mose, Ms. Mose, if you could please go ahead.
Okay. Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, the language, as we were going through all of these various pieces and trying to come up with a proposal that came together, we were looking at ways in which we could address the fact that this was now shifting from a recommended or suggested course of action to part of the state system. Mm-hmm. And so in terms of that concept, it really seemed that it was going to need to become part of the business as usual, as opposed to relying on outside resources to help accomplish it, that we really would need to look at how it gets built into the existing system.
Senator Nelson.
I'm glad you brought, I forgot to mention that distinction. That's right. It's now mandatory instead of strongly encouraging. Quite frankly, I don't have a problem with that either. I think mandatory is fine. But I do think it's important that we encourage districts to use revenue and in-kind contributions from non-state sources and to seek administrative cost savings. They should do that all the time anyway. And so, Senator Dahl, I'd like to make an oral amendment that we include lines 2.25 to 2.29, and I hope you see that as a friendly amendment. It certainly doesn't, I don't think it alters the proposal at all as far as watering it down, because it is mandatory now, so I strongly encourage, and I support that piece of the bill. But I do think we should seek for administrative cost savings, and we should look for in-kind contributions and non-state sources as well.
Madam Chair, and I will accept your amendment. As I look at it, you know, it is something that everybody should be doing. It seemed rather parochial in terms of mentioning your school, Rochester, by name. But I think this is fine. If it gives some comfort to the senator, I'd be happy to.
Thank you. So on the oral amendment, Senator Glossop?
Could Senator Nelson just explain a little bit about CARE?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Yes,
I'd be glad to. Yes, this was just listed because it is a program that has worked greatly in the Rochester Area School District, and it is joint collaborations with some of our key industries, whether it be medical ventures or technology pieces. So it's using, and I think it's great too to bring into the schools those local careers in tech and those local industries to help make those transitions, because that's where the kids are going to be living. So let's help make that transition to the jobs that are in the local community. It just happened that one of the I was on the Governor's Workforce Development Council, as was Mo Amundson, who is working with the Rochester School District, who has lined up a lot of these collaborations with non-state sources but private business, and this was just listed purely as an example of, and that's all it was an example.
Thank you. Senator Nelson, a follow-up?
Senator Nelson, mm-hmm. Does this include like internships and mentorships for students?
Senator Nelson. Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe there are internships. I believe there are also businesses coming into the schools. So it's a broad array.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson, did you have a question about this?
Yes, Madam Chair, and Senator Dahl. You know, this is now mandatory. And so school districts that don't have access to Rochester, let's say, a community that has a lot of people with a lot of money, would the school districts that raise money on their own, would that lower the state aid? Or would there be some kind of consideration of school districts that raise extra money, or would it still get the same aid?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure. I don't want to stray too far from the bill, but I think this is would be an expectation that every school should have the resources to be able to implement this particular language.
And I just want to, Madam Chair and Senator Dahl, I certainly defer to you, and you know, if you accept this amendment, that's fine. But I just want to mention my concern.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks.
Senator, and I think it says, you know, are encouraged, so it's not saying they should pursue. So hopefully, you know, that is permissive language. Senator, are you ready to move your bill?
Well, I think on that
friendly
amendment.
Do you want to vote on the amendment?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Senator, we need to move on the oral amendment. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted.
And Madam Chair, I think Senator, we did want to address her other concern about minimum requirements. If we could just, Senator Nelson's concern, if we could just maybe have Matt Moss address that. Because it was a very important part of our discussion in the last month or two as well.
Before you go, Senator Wheeler, seems like you have something to add.
Yes, Madam Chair, I was just wondering if we could ask the School Boards Association to share their position. It's the school board that issues the diploma, the walk on the stage. We talk about local control, flexibility, and I don't know if they want to announce their statement, but.
Anyone here?
Should I? Let's Matt finish your comment.
Yeah. Mr. Moss, if you could just do your statement, and then we will let the association also do just proceed.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, Senator Dahl. The issue of minimum requirements clearly was something that we spent a lot of time discussing in the working group and looking for ways in which we could address it in a way that was going to be seen as a sufficient trade-off in some ways for the idea of shifting to higher standards paired with, so this is just about assessment, there have been a lot of reforms that the legislature has passed in the last few years that have dealt with increasing the rigor of our standards, that have dealt with increasing the credit requirements for graduation. There are reforms that are underway that just naturally fall to districts to address in terms of local labor market needs and partnerships that are evolving. All of those contribute to the set of requirements that students face in their high schools. And so in looking at this concept of a test establishing a particular benchmark and saying that if you're above the line, you have met it, and you're right below the line, you haven't, suggests that there's a certain amount of precision in standardized testing that just really isn't there. And that someone who's 2 points away, they're likely performing at about the same level in reading and math and writing, but the state is saying, you're to one student, you've passed, you're a graduate, and to another group of students, you haven't, you're a failure, you don't get to graduate. And that seems to be a fairly absolute statement. And we know that students follow different paths, and we know that their trajectories are different at various times. And so, again, building a system that looks forward to the future, that's anchored in the idea of college and career readiness for all students, that provides the system of supports to students, both in career planning as well as in interventions and remediation that are tied to the college expectations for remediation. We thought it was a way to address that particular point sufficiently.
Thank you very much. Senator Nino.
Madam Chair, to that point, if we're talking about college readiness, you got to pass tests in college. How does this prepare them for college?
Madam Chair and Senator Nino, you are correct that you do have to pass tests in college. However, we are, MNSCU as a system is open access. So we have a lot of students who may start who are not prepared for college, and they may have to have their starting point in remediation. And that's part of the reason why the MNSCU system is so supportive of this particular bill, because it helps to align assessment with college entrance and college placement tests, and builds in targeted remediation to work with both MNSCU, the Department of Ed, and local districts for K-12, as well as to have the same conversations with MNSCU and adult basic education to help provide that remediation. At the same point in time, when we look at workforce programs, certificates, diplomas, associate degrees, baccalaureate degrees, there are different entrance requirements or prerequisites that students need to meet dependent upon the industry and the certificate that they're actually interested in attaining. So, for instance, the benchmark for somebody who wants a nurse's aide certificate or a home health aide certificate is very different than the benchmark for a student who wants to go into a nursing career. So it's how do we help customize and have a more holistic view of the continuum of learners that we serve in this education system? How do we actually help them to think based on their career pathway or educational aspiration, how can we give a more coherent and transparent information about what college and career readiness benchmarks actually are?
Thank you. We have administrators board. If you could please identify yourself for the record.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Denise Diedrich, and I am here on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association. I'm here representing over 2,000 locally elected school board members across the state, and I would like to thank Senator Wieger for acknowledging the fact that it is school board members who confer diplomas on a yearly basis, and we take that very seriously. Tonight, I will try to remind myself over and over again that I'm talking on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association, because it's really hard not to interject my parental point of view on this. I have 3 kids in college right now in various types and sizes and that type of thing, so I feel like I'm like a self-proclaimed expert on that, and with very average children, and they all got to college, which was the interesting. And I've also been a school board member and a very involved parent and teacher. So anyhow, the Minnesota School Boards Association supports the work of the task force. We had an MSBA member, Grace Kelleher, on the task force, And one of the major conclusions, obviously, that came out of the task force was to eliminate the high stakes graduation test. Along with that, though, we want to also point out the other strengths of the bill, because if you just take that piece and you just say, I don't like the bill because it takes that out, I think you're missing the real general direction of the bill. And I'm going to highlight those, I think, in the strengths of the bill. First of all, is that this bill aligns a student's individual preparation for post-secondary, whatever that student's strengths, desires, maturity level, that type of thing, any of those combination of things, it helps the student align his or her preparation all during his or her high school career, instead of just waiting for this one day when they take this test and get the scores back and then figure out what kind of a path are they going to be on for the next year. And you would, I think, be quite surprised sometimes at the rigmarole that some students need to go through once they have either when they have not passed the test. The other thing is that I think that that this bill adds focus and clarity. I think the commissioner said it beautifully when she said it makes the big thing the big thing. The kids now realize what they are working towards, and they have tests that they take along the way that help them figure out, am I on the right path to the big thing, the big test, and then what is after, and that is obviously college readiness. I like to always say that it helps kids keep their eye on the prize, instead of being shifted and directed in lots of different directions in their high school career. The third thing that I think that this bill does is it adds relevance to to a child's high school preparation. And it takes into account their relevance happens when kids feel like people are meeting them where they're at, where they are in maturity-wise, and where they are in interests and strengths. And I also carried the governor's high school redesign bill, and that was Governor Pawlenty's. And there are many pieces in this bill that was in Governor Pawlenty's high school redesign bill, and it was absolutely, and it was part of the governor's platform across the United States. And there were a lot of good things in that bill, and there are many of the same things in this bill. And I just want to, the other thing that I want to emphasize, it does not throw out our testing system totally. And to listen to some of the testimony, you might think we have no testing system any longer. It still keeps the many core pieces that just give us guidance and direction for a child on how to nurture them towards the end goal. The other thing that this bill does really well is it holds parents accountable, in my opinion. In many parts of the bill, you will see the word parent. The parents are involved in the goal setting. The parents are involved in help directing the child and redirecting the child. And I think that we have all in this body have been talking about how do we get parents more involved in a student's education. And this bill does it actually without being punitive. So for these, and the other, one last thing is that this bill also puts some rigor, has some components of rigor in it. It actually requires school districts to encourage kids who are ready for college-ready classes to be taking the college-ready classes. And in my opinion, what that will do is take some of our middle-of-the-road type kids and say, you're college-bound and you are ready for college classes, that's what you ought to be doing, instead of taking outdoor adventures like my children did. So with that, Madam Chair, I am done. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Diedrich. And please, you know, we welcome your input, whether you're in support or not. So I know that a lot of the people who are representing different organizations who care very deeply about our children and our schools are here. But I also know that you're not very shy about asking for time to speak. So let us know, you know, if you need to be part of the agenda, if you wish to testify. Members, any more questions to the author or any of the testifiers?
Madam Chair, roll call, please.
Okay.
I'll just finish,
Senator,
Madam Chair,
Paul,
if I could.
Please,
and again, I just appreciate so much the work that's been done on this working group, and since we started the legislative process this session. You know, a couple of points that Ms. Diedrich made. Parent communication is really important to this whole process, and Again, we can go back to our testimony from the folks at Mounds View and Irondale, where they have an ACT, where students who never thought they might take the ACT are taking it now. The school pays for it, and they're finding, I actually am college ready. So there's these wonderful stories out there, but throughout the whole process, throughout this suite of assessments, parent communication was so key in tying these things and getting people to the next step, not just to pass that test, but to get to college, to get to a career that really works for them. And we know that not at the point that they fail or pass the test. We know that many years before, and we're working to make sure that it continues beyond that. So I hope that you do vote for this bill because of all the good things in this bill, a result of a task force that came together, very diverse. And if you look at the names on that task force, with just the exception of a couple of dissenters on the cut score, I think it was a comprehensive report that really took everyone's concern and put it hopefully to fruition in this bill.
Also, Senator, I hope that we read, some of our close friends from the business organizations that said, we support the majority of the recommendations. Not our proposals are never perfect. Some are remarkably good, and people support them 100%. But I think you should feel proud of the fact that a lot of people came together, and that indeed, there is a great majority of the recommendations that are incorporated here are supported by multiple organizations who work with our kids. Some brief remarks,
yes,
Senator Benson.
Very brief. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Dahl, you have put together a good bill, and I do thank the committee for all of the pieces that we've talked about and how important those are. And I do want to be very clear, though, while I support the alignment of the reference test to college tests and the resources to remediate and the parent involvement and the encouraging high schoolers who are able to earn college credit, I'm going to vote against this bill. And I'm going to vote against this bill today because it does take away those minimum requirements. And I do think we have a better alternative in front of us, which is actually taking all of the great work you've done, but having still some minimum requirements. And it doesn't escape me, Madam Chair, that we're talking about making sure that kids are ready for careers. And yet the very employers that provide those careers are saying, wow, we like all of this bill, but we're worried. We don't like this part that doesn't have a minimum competency base. So I'm hoping, as often is the case, we'll get another chance. I'm hoping this will come back with something a little bit different in regards to that final competency, minimum competency. I think parents deserve that. I think students need that. And certainly our job providers need that as well. So I just wanted to be very clear why I'm voting no at this time, hoping it will come back in a little bit different form.
I think we will have it back in our omnibus bill on Thursday so that you can have conversations with, I know the author is having conversations with Senator Stump about his bill, so you will have ample opportunity to have that conversation. Senator Thompson.
I know those are roll calls that have been requested. I'd ask this to be recorded in the journal. I guess I need two other folks to support that.
Do I have Senator Nina supports that? Senator Chamberlain. Do you have a question, Senator? Go ahead.
A comment.
Senator.
If anyone's got questions, I can wait.
Thank you.
Senator Dahl, you've got a mostly good bill. There is some good stuff in here, but there's one big, massive poison pill. And it's summarized best on page 6, and I'll just read it. It says, students are not required to achieve a specified score or level of proficiency on an assessment under this subdivision to graduate from high school. And that's the problem. We have no minimum standard, no minimum requirement. Now, I'm sympathetic to the fact that there are students that have difficulty taking written assessments, difficulty with testing. But let's figure out a way to accommodate that. Let's not completely eliminate the need to be proficient. Why would we do that? And I'll point you to the handout that we got from, I think, from the partnership. it's the travesty of low expectations. And you see it on this graph right here. The one test that we've told students you really don't have to pass is the one test where we're not seeing any achievement. We're not seeing any growth. which take a look at reading and writing, where they actually have to demonstrate proficiency to graduate, and we're making progress. But math, where, well, if we fail it three times, you still graduate. No progress. That's tragic. That's the travesty of low expectations. And that's what we have, and that's the poison pill in this bill. There's no way I can vote for that, no matter how much good is in this bill.
Thank you, Senator. The clerk will take the roll.
Senator Torres Ray.
Yes.
Senator Dahl.
Yes.
Senator Nelson.
No.
Senator Carlson. Senator Chamberlain.
No.
Senator Clausen.
Yes.
Senator Franzen. Senator Johnson.
Yes.
Senator Kent. Senator Nienau.
No.
Senator Peterson. Senator Rood.
No.
Senator Thompson.
No.
Senator Wieger.
Yes.
Senator Wicklund.
Yes. Being six yeses and five noes, the bill passes. Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Senators, I would like to let you know we're going to have, the agenda for tomorrow has been posted. We really recommend that we have several bills that will be heard. We really would like to encourage you to review that and let the authors know if you have any concerns. If you would like to offer any amendments, it's likely that you can work out some differences with the authors so that you can come together and we can save a little bit of time. The same thing is the case for Thursday. On Thursday, we will, I think we will have our omnibus bill, which will be quite hefty, and we are going to go through the language that you have reviewed already. But please let me know. You will have that posted pretty soon, as soon as the staff is really able to put it together. It will be online, so feel free to call me so that I can call the authors and try to figure out how do we incorporate your amendments and figure out how we work out language even before we come here. So I would very much appreciate your diligence in that regard. Do you have any questions with respect to the process or any? Thank you, and for now we will adjourn.